This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo in Melbourne on Joy 94.9 across Australia on the Community Radio Network via satellite.
When Bobby Badrum was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis at the age of 13, he had no idea that 25 years later he would be helping to improve the lives of thousands of people living with MS.
When the MS TV show went to air in June in 2007, Bobby and his production team had spent 6 months interviewing people in Victoria and New South Wales about their experiences with MS.
With the endorsement of MS Australia, Bobby also interviewed staff from the MS Society, people newly diagnosed with MS, researchers, carers, residents of MS residential units, fundraisers and volunteers.
One of the issues that is frequently overlooked or deliberately avoided is disabled people in regards to sex and sexuality.
Bobby has produced Behind Closed Doors, a short documentary that looks at the issues of sex, sexuality and differently abled people in our communities. He joins us on the show today.
Behind Closed Doors premieres on Foxtel's Aurora channel at 1:38 at 183 at 9:30 tonight. Now, if you go to the Allegro webpage, allegro.org.au, you will find quite a few links to various things, including when you can see Behind Closed Doors. Bobby, welcome to the Community Radio Network.
How are you, Adam?
I'm well, thank you, Bobby. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself before I start?
Okay. I was diagnosed with MS at 13. I actually reckon I had it at about 8. Spent time in a wheelchair without my sight, up and down, been very ill from the disease. And I thought, you know what, it's time to give people with disabilities a voice. So that's why I've made this 8-part series show.
What is multiple sclerosis?
Multiple sclerosis, when I was diagnosed, they said you've got demyelination. What it is, it's a neurological disease that multiple is a lot, sclerosis is scarring. So what actually happens is the insulation around your nerves, for some unknown reason, gets eaten away, and hence then problems start happening.
Is that the myelin sheath?
That's the myelin sheath.
Right. So that wears down, and then the electrical messages that travel along the nerves short circuit into other parts of the body. How does it manifest? What happens with people with MS?
Well, you can have MS mildly. You can have loss of your limbs. You can end up in a wheelchair. You can lose your sight. You can have trouble moving your arms. You can have trouble talking. All of these things I have experienced personally over my 28 years of the journey. There's no cure for the disease, but there is a drug called Tysabri that I'm on at the moment, which I was introduced to my good friend Lena Morocco, and I have a treatment every month. Dr. Helmut is the boss of all that sort of stuff. So, it's a disease that's hard to live with, but then again, everything is.
So is this a disease that affects the spine, is it?
No, doesn't expect to find. No, right. Okay. No, does not. It's got nothing to do with the spine.
So so when you're having an attack or when MS mm-hmm. is happening, is it pain or is it...
some people have pain. I'm in pain 24 hours a day. It's a very unpredictable disease, and it's on various levels with different people. Different people, different cases, mm-hmm. basically. That's what it is. Some people have got it very, very mildly. Some people have got it very, very harshly. Some have got in between. There's so many different levels to the disease. It's...
When you get MS and when mm-hmm. it starts to manifest, does it go to a level and stay there, or does it get worse?
Well, it can get worse and it can get better.
Right.
It goes up and down. I mean, with me, I lost the use of my legs. I lost the use of my eye, well, one eye and then both eyes, and everything came back. Then it went again. It comes back. It goes again. You feel dizzy. There's just varying degrees of it. You know, I can be harsh with it. I looking at you and you looking at me today, I'm fine.
What caused it?
So, they don't know. They don't know what causes it. They don't know what causes it. They don't know what cures it.
So you haven't lost the sight of your eyes then?
Yeah, I have.
in your eyes.
I have, but they come back.
Oh, that's what I was wondering. Because you're looking at me and I thought...
I look at you now.
Yeah.
And I have lost the sight and it's come back.
Mm.
It goes, it comes back. It goes on a little bit of a trip and comes back.
But do people actually recover completely from MS or is it always with you?
It's always with you. Until I find a cure, of course.
Mm.
It's always with you.
At the moment, there are 3.7 million disabled people in Australia,
mm-hmm.
proportionately to our population. In the UK, for example, there are 8.5 million disabled people, and in the USA, there's 52.6 million, 37 million all across Europe, 4.2 million in Canada, and worldwide, 500 million disabled people. Mm-hmm. What actually constitutes being disabled varies from culture and community and community. But generally we say people who are disabled are people who have a different set of abilities and cannot perform the functions of most adults who are, and I hate to use this word, normally abled.
Yep.
Okay. Would that be a reasonable assumption?
That is spot on. But I mean, with that figure, double it, because you're forgetting about the carers. So the carers play a very important, vital role to people that are disabled, whether you're disabled wheelchair, whether you're mentally disabled, whether you're deaf, blind. It's just the carers are so supportive. They're just the best people, the carers, because without carers, as we all know, or people who are disabled know, it's very difficult to live without a carer.
You see, disability comes in different forms. Like I've got 3 compressed discs in my back.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally I get a bit of arthritis with it. It's not a huge thing, but there are times it's just really, really difficult for me to get in and out of the car. So I've got a disabled sticker on my car, right, which is quite useful at times, let me tell you. But I don't, in a number of times I get told off by people because I don't look disabled. They say to me, "You're not disabled." I say, "How do you know? You don't look disabled." I said, "Well, that's good to hear. Thank you, because I put a lot of time and practice in trying to be completely mobile."
Yeah. I mean, just on the disabled sticker scenario, I've had a disabled sticker since 18 years old. So I've had one I'm 42, so I've had one for 24 years. And when I'm not well, you can see I'm not well. But when I'm well, you can't tell. But I park in a disabled spot, and I get that too. You're not disabled. I say, well, you're a doctor. You're a parking officer. You're not a doctor. And that's why I wear my MS tag.
You shouldn't have to, though.
No, you shouldn't have to, but it's the society that we're in. I shouldn't have to explain myself and say, yeah, but I've got multiple sclerosis and blah, 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 blah. I'm sick of doing it, actually.
I watched your documentary Behind Closed Doors. I didn't realise you had multiple sclerosis. I thought you were just interviewing people.
Yeah.
So you had a very personal interest, obviously.
Yeah.
We're going to get into his documentary in a little while. I just want to talk a little bit more generally about disability and about how disability affects human sexuality. Okay? People with physical or intellectual disabilities in our society are often regarded as non-sexual. I think community in general tends to forget that disabled people or people who are affected intellectually do have sex and sexuality. It's an important part of who they are. But because they're not able to do a lot of things for themselves, it becomes not only neglected but highly discouraged. I've heard so many times about people who are disabled or mentally disabled are given sedatives.
Well, look, this is one of the reasons I did my 8-part series. And actually, I spent 3 months in a brothel that caters for disabled people. And you'll see, I think it's show number 7 out of the 8. But, people that are disabled, it was a guy who was a really nice guy. He had cerebral palsy. And I did ask him all the questions that people are thinking about. Can you get an erection? How do you have sex? Is it good? And I spoke to the working girls too, and they were great. They say, "Bobby, we're actually giving a service to the community that nobody really thinks about."
All right, let's look at this in depth. Let's just take a step back a bit. So you have created this DVD called Behind Closed Doors, where you went with several disabled people and you followed them and asked them about their sex and sexuality, and you also went to a brothel that caters for disabled people. Is that right?
Yeah, I went to a brothel.
Why?
Because
I watched that and I was really upset.
Which one did you watch?
Behind Closed Doors.
Yeah, but which one? There's eight.
The one where about the disabled people who went to the brothel.
Oh, you watched the brothel episode?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that the one that's going to air on Aurora?
Yeah, well, there's eight of them. That's okay. Going to air in a month and a half.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that really, it really upset me. How did you find it, Peter?
I found it confronting at times, but I was reminded of years ago there was a story in a home that cared for disabled people, and two nurses got into a heap of trouble because they aided two people to have sex.
Mm.
And they were threatened with the sack until the public, there was such an uproar from the public, how dare they deny these people their sexual feelings by threatening to sack these nurses. So it really worked in a positive way in the end.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, with sexuality and disabilities, I mean, in the end, we're all human. So we all need to have sex, and whether you're disabled or not disabled, there shouldn't be an issue. And that's what I'm trying to do with my show, to say, you know, I went into a brothel, I went into a strip club, I've gone into a BDSM dungeon, I've got all different angles to it. You know, that's the 8-part, 30-minute episodes that's going to air. And the thing is, people are actually applauding the actual initiative that I've taken to say to people, hey, disabled people need to have sex. And so there is nothing wrong with that.
How do you know?
Because I'm disabled myself and I need to have sex.
Does that cover all disabled people?
Yep.
You think?
Yeah, I reckon. As many of I've spoken to, a lot of disabled people, whether you're mentally challenged, intellectually challenged, in wheelchair, deaf, blind.
Hang on a minute, Bobby Bajoram, but not all disabled people can function sexually.
Well, the ones I've spoken to,
I think they can. It may just be touch. It doesn't matter how it's performed. Yeah. I mean, just to have somebody touch you can be very erotic.
Yeah, stimulating. I think they can.
But what about you, though? When you're going through all your adventures to these various brothels and whatever, did you find any of it confronting yourself?
No. It was because the thing is, I was just passionate about getting the message out there. They were quite good, actually. The brothels was great. The working girls were great. The people that were actually interviewed, one of the guys was had cerebral palsy, was in a wheelchair. Fantastic, very open, you know. And they were like, "This is great because everyone needs to know about this, and nobody does." And that's the issue to my show. And I went to a strip club. Same thing. They were fantastic.
Mm. I'd like to read you something from a book by Winder. It was published in 1983, because I have actually done quite a bit of research about this before going to air. And I've just got a couple of paragraphs. If we accept that sexual expression is a natural and important part of human life, then perceptions that deny sexuality for disabled people deny a basic right of expression. Okay, fair enough, I accept that. The perception of people with disabilities as non-sexual can present a barrier to safe sex education, both for workers who may be influenced by these views and disabled people themselves in terms of gaining access and information and acceptance as sexual beings. As one of the physically disabled woman wrote, "How could you do it?" was the question which had many annoyances and was put up to me by many people during and after my pregnancy. The GP wondered how I could have had intercourse in my predicament. You see, not only was it immoral for an unmarried mother to be an unmarried mother, but it was doubly immoral to be unmarried mother and severely disabled. For paraplegic and quadriplegic people, a loss of sexual function does not mean a corresponding loss of sexuality, which brings us to the point, which is the most important sex organ that we have?
Oh, you're thinking of the one between your ears.
Of course, it's the brain which is the most important. And they were saying, I won't read the whole thing because it goes for pages, is that people who have paraplegia in such a way that their sexual organs are no longer sexual organs or can't be stimulated, they quite often have erogenous zones in other parts of their body. Can you identify with that?
Yeah. I agree. Absolutely. That is 100% correct. You know, it doesn't happen. You know, I would actually say the most important thing is between your ears, not between your legs.
Yes.
And that's why people that are severely, severely disabled, that's where they get their pleasure and excitement from between their ears.
Now, let's have a look at this documentary that you've made behind closed doors and look at what you did and who you interviewed and why you did it in the way that you did. Now, you went and you got really graphic, some quite graphic images.
Yep.
There's nothing, there's no sexual things to be seen, okay? But it all leads and hints towards that it's going on.
Yep.
Yeah, and you went into a brothel that, and was it in New South Wales?
No, it was in Braeside in Victoria. Actually.
Okay.
It was great.
All right.
It's really good. They were really good.
So is this really a brothel that just particularly caters for disabled people?
No, this is a brothel that caters for able-bodied people, but they have a facility that caters for disabled people. It's one of the very few in Victoria. Well, I don't know of any others. And he was the owner, Jim, I can say that, was just really, really great and let me in there. And I actually filmed the guy, the working girls. We had a chat. Didn't film him doing it.
Was it Toby, Tony?
Toby. Yeah, it was Toby. And it was like a really eye-opening experience. You know, it was very eye-opening it's episode. Out of the 8 episodes I did for the series, I think it's episode 7.
Right, because I found it really quite confronting, especially when the working girls were saying, look, you know, some of the people that we get in here are not particularly well cared for.
Clean, they're not clean.
And we have to clean them. And then they went through the process of what particular areas and things they had to do to clean some of the people. And that sort of like made me, oh my God, I don't really need to hear this. I found it really very confronting and very challenging, and it was a real turn-off, but it's based on truth.
Well, look, the series is a factual thing. It's real. You know, it's not rubbish. It's not made up. It's not scripted. It's an actual real look at real life with disabilities and their sexual desires and how to please them.
A special guest on Allegro today is Bobby Bajoram, who's produced a series of documentaries called Behind Closed Doors. You've done others as well, but we're just talking about Behind Closed Doors. Can we talk about you and sexuality at the moment?
Sure.
Okay, so what about you with multiple sclerosis? Do you find you go through periods of when you can have sex and can't have sex?
No. No, I'm with sex. Me and sex, I'm fine. There is no problem. Ask my wife.
Okay.
Because I'm married. I've got a little daughter. Dr. John Tickell is in the show that gives his really good ideas, and he's a great bloke. I just want to say good day to him because he's suffering from brain cancer. He's been diagnosed with brain cancer. So how you going, Dr. John and Sue? But he's a top bloke, and he's a medical doctor, so he's the authority in the show. So he's in every episode, and he gives his opinions on the diagnosis of scenarios and gives really good ideas. That's what he does. But with the whole series, it was something. I mean, with me having multiple sclerosis, I was the youngest ever guy male diagnosed with MS. So I don't want to sort of put my hand up for that title. It's not a great title to have, but I'm sure there are younger people now, but 28 years ago I was, and I got it. I know that I had it about 8 years old. But with sexuality, there is no problem with sex with me. I don't have a sexual problem with me or my wife.
Okay.
We really don't. And before I had a baby, I went and seen an anesthesiologist. I think Dr. John calls it that. To go and see or something to say, look, is MS, will my daughter get MS if I have a daughter or a son? And the answer was no. It's not hereditary.
It's not hereditary. No, so
not
it's
MS.
Just one of those things.
It's just one of those things. Bad luck.
Okay. Well, that's partially good news, I suppose.
Yeah.
That your children don't. So how old's your child?
My child, Annie, is 8 months old. And, you know, it's great having a daughter, and to have a daughter, you got to have sex. And I didn't have a problem with having sex. I mean, I've got a normal sex life with my wife.
Okay.
There is no problem in the bedroom whatsoever. Now, I'm sure I've heard, like I said, MS is a disease that is different variations and different people. It's very unpredictable. I'm sure some people have a problem, but it's just that's just the way it is. But me personally, no. It's all good, swinging off the chandeliers and everything.
Okay. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo with Adam and Peter across Australia in the Community Radio Network and locally on Joy 94.9.
We're speaking with Bobby Badgerum about who was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis at the age of 13.
You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo, broadcasting across Australia on the Community Radio Network via satellite. Allegro Non Troppo would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for ongoing support and to APRA for sponsoring Allegro Non Troppo. On Allegro Non Troppo today, we're talking to Bobby Badgerum, who was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis at the age of 13. Bobby has been an advocate for the rights of disabled people and in particular with relation to sex and sexuality. Bobby has released a DVD which is going to air tonight on the Aurora Network on Foxtel, and if you go to the Allegro webpage allegro.org.au, you'll be able to see a hyperlink to when it's on, because it's on a few times and there's a few repeats and it's a full series. The version we're looking at was about disabled people going to see prostitutes. So Bobby, before you got married, did you ever actually go to visit one of these centres yourself?
Have I been to a prostitute before?
Yeah.
Yep.
What was it like?
Interesting.
Okay.
It was interesting. It was like, it was more, I liked the chase, to tell you the truth. But it was like you pay your money and you have sex. And I think the chase is more exciting. But, you know, sometimes when you need to go, you need to go, and you haven't got time to go and pick up a girl. So it was okay. It wasn't great, but the job was done.
Oh well, a man's got to do what a man's got to do,
and a woman, I suppose,
and a woman. Yes, and that's one of the things I also, because there's females and males involved, and females also need to have sex, so they go to a brothel, and the brothel can arrange for male hookers to service them.
Right.
Disabled women, that is. So that's also a service that's available.
Just as a little aside, are there any for gay males?
Yes, is there. Yeah, actually, that's a good question. Episode 6, I interview a gay male prostitute who services gay male men. His name is Tyson. Top bloke. Interviewed him, and yes, he services gay disabled males.
Is that here in Melbourne?
He's here in Melbourne. Yep.
Would have been great to have him on the show.
Yeah.
See how he, and you. Oh, the other thing that really impressed me in the episode that we saw, that Peter and I saw, you had a young gay man with cerebral palsy, Heath.
Yeah, Heath. Yeah, nice blokes. Heath's cerebral palsy, and Heath came out and he was gay, and asked him the normal questions, and can you get an erection and all those sort of things, and is it difficult having sex being... So he had spina bifida, Heath, right. Actually, not cerebral palsy, spina bifida. He had something else. So, you know, it was interesting, because I had a conversation. He goes, Bobby, there's a stigma with, okay, gay is a stigma. Like he said, there's a problem there with people. And I said, well, you know, that's slowly being eroded away. Now, like he goes, and being gay and disabled, there's a scenario that has to be eroded away also. So that's what I spoke to Heath about.
Right.
And hopefully people will get the message. I think that's...
I certainly did.
Did you?
Yep.
Did you get the message?
Yeah. I was absolutely quite moved by what he had to say.
Yeah.
And I have seen people out in the gay scene with cerebral palsy or other disabilities, and I see how they're not treated badly. They're more or less ignored.
Well, I mean, the thing is that's one of the things that I experienced too, is this, you know, this sympathy thing. You get pushed in the corner, you're ignored. And it's, look, it's just got to stop, because you just have enough. You get fed up. You just really do.
Do you understand why some people feel uncomfortable about the whole thing, though? I have at times with disabled people, because I don't really know what to say. What can I say that's not going to sound condescending? What can I say that's not going to sound as if I'm being fake? And how do I approach them? What's the appropriate way to talk to them? What do you say? How do you introduce yourself? And how do it make it look as though I'm not just talking to them because I feel sorry for them? Well, tell me how. I'm dying to know.
Okay. Approach a disabled person as you would any other. There is no different approach techniques. Just be honest, be sincere, and approach a disabled person as you would any other.
And the only way that you're going to overcome all this public reticence is to make yourself public and get out there and let the public see that you're just normal people with a disability.
Look, the thing is, with my series, one of the things with the series that I've made, like there's 8 episodes and it covers all aspects of disabilities with people, whether it's sexual or not sexual. Half of it's sexual, half of it isn't, but there's a whole array of things. But one of the things that I really, really am an advocate of is to a disabled person is a person. So we are human beings. We are not able to do certain things. That's Dr. John says a disabled person is just not able to do and function in certain areas. That's the only difference. Yet this stigma with being a disabled people, sometimes people didn't want to touch me because they thought they'd catch MS or something off me. I'm going, are you people for real?
Maybe we need to train the public to think of not as a disabled person, but as a person with a disability.
Well, that's exactly right. I think that a person should be looked at with a disability is a person first and foremost, and you've got a disability, how can we get around it and how can we help you cope and have a better life?
Does it happen like that?
No.
Why?
It doesn't happen because the stigma is a disabled person, I've spoken to thousands and thousands of disabled people, and one of the general consensus with a disabled person, able-bodied people think they're not productive and they're not normal. And that's what I've got. Now, what it is, and all the disabled people out there in Australia, and I'm sure in the world, where my show, the BBC, picked up my show, so it'll go around the world. The thing is, with a disabled person, all they want to be treated is like a normal person and to take the stigma away.
It's not that easy, Bobby.
It is.
It's not.
It is.
You see somebody who's severely disabled out somewhere, you have to treat them slightly differently. They've got a different set of needs and different circumstances, and they're in a situation where things just don't work exactly the same for them. We can't treat them exactly the same.
Well, I think, look, the thing is, with a disabled person, they're not dumb. We're not dumb. We're not stupid. Disabled people are a lot more intelligent than able-bodied people in a lot of circumstances.
I'd agree with that because they have a different set of life experiences, which has given them a different perspective on reality.
Yeah. Okay, so what I'm saying is, whether you're not functioning, your body isn't as functional as an able-bodied person, your brain is functioning. And who's that Professor Stephen
Hawking?
Stephen Hawking, he's disabled, but he's a brilliant guy. Now, he can't express his passions with movement, but he can through his intellectual capabilities.
Yes.
And that's the thing with disabled people. Disabled people need to be given a voice with people in Australia and the world to say, hey, we're normal. We're not dickheads. We're not dumb. We're not, okay, we can't move right, but we've got a disability, but it's just a disability.
Okay.
That, you know, we've got more ability and less disability.
The disabled people and sexuality.
Yep.
I would imagine for a long, long time it's been completely disregarded and completely ignored and completely been suppressed. And I think it's probably only in, the last 10 years or so that it's become something that the community and the people who are caring and look after disabled people are coming to terms with. Is that a right assumption?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I just think people with the sexual issue with people with disabilities, people are just scared.
Okay.
They don't want to go there. Because it's just a stigma. Of, you know, disabled people can't have sex. Why is that?
But 10 years ago,
there would be not even
an inkling or a thought that there could be a brothel that would look after disabled people.
Yep.
So we've seen a little bit of an evolution in social attitude towards the sexual needs of people with disabilities. Yeah.
Yep.
Is it there yet, or still do we still have a way to go?
Oh, look, I reckon 10% on the way, and 90%. to go the full way.
Okay. Like, what needs to happen?
Well, I think it's a big voice. Like my show gets out there. I think the media needs to do a lot of things. It's up to, that's why I've done this show, to say to people, hey, it's something that is real. It happens. There's a lot of disabled people out there, and their carers, by the way. Everyone forgets about the carers because they take care of disabled people. So it's something that needs to be played out in the media. Now, unfortunately, the media goes for normal, and disabled ain't normal. Yeah. And that's wrong. It okay. should be disabled people should get equal coverage as same as the Paralympics. The Paralympics isn't coverage like the normal Winter Olympics because they're disabled. Well, they do the same things.
Yeah.
They just got one leg and one eye and they're blind. But so what? They're still athletes. They're still champions. They still have to train. They still want to win that gold.
We've got that. Thank you, Bobby. You're quite passionate.
No, I'm very passionate about it. Okay. Like it's actually upsets me sometimes.
Well, it's taken long enough to get wheelchair access to places, you know.
Well,
it?
Look, the thing is, years and years ago, the disabled access for if you're disabled and in a wheelchair, it's terrible. It was terrible. It's slowly improving. I spoke to Robert Doyle and he's improving access with the City of Melbourne, but there's a long way to go. The infrastructure just ain't there.
On your DVD, with the interviews that you did of the disabled people and the prostitutes, you asked several of the prostitutes how they felt about servicing disabled people.
Yep.
And they all said they don't mind it. They do it because they feel they don't mind doing it. It's not something that they have a particular problem with. But then you asked them if any of them actually liked it. It was the sort of thing they would choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a terribly positive response from that. So I suppose living in the real world, they were being truthful, but they still did what they were required to do anyway. How does that sit with the ego for disabled people?
Well, I think the thing is the majority of the sex workers or the prostitutes, if you like, were quite happy to look after disabled yeah. people. They actually said they were actually more joyous and more funny
yes.
to be with than an able-bodied person, because an able-bodied person would talk about the problems. A disabled person would be more happy to actually be in a situation where they're engaging in sex.
Yeah. I mean, a prostitute servicing clients, the percentage of people they actually find attractive to have sex with wouldn't be that great, I imagine. I mean, there are plenty of people who are perhaps elderly people or, you know, grossly overworked people, whatever, yep. who they service. So yep. there's no prerequisite on them actually necessarily liking.
Look, I tell you a funny thing, and this is off the record, so no one's listening to this, but I'll tell you anyway. I asked that question. I said to the prostitutes, I said, on a scale of 1 to 10, with all the type of people that you girls have serviced, where would you put the people with disabilities? And they were like 1 and 2. Mm. They were just great people to deal with, great people to have sex with.
One being highest.
Mm. Sometimes they don't have sex with disabled people. The disabled people just want company. And yeah. they're a great, you know, a prostitute's like a psychologist, he's a carer. The only problem that I constantly got was that they're not clean. The carers, some carers don't clean them a lot, so there should be a brothel that is actually dedicated specifically for disabled people. They should. That's what should be.
Okay, that's a reasonable request.
Yeah, and that's what they've said. They've said, you know what, we really think there should be a brothel that is purposely built and dedicated to for disabled people.
Indeed, well. Maybe that's something to look forward to in the future. Our special guest on Allegro today is Bobby Bajoram. We're talking about his DVD, which is screening tonight on Foxtel, called Behind Closed Doors. Our special guest today is Bobby Bajoram. We've been talking about the series that he's created that's going on to TV, onto Foxtel tonight, and it'll be on for several weeks, called Behind Closed Doors. We've been looking at some of the issues of sex, sexuality, and disabled people. And we touched on before about pregnancy, disabled people being pregnant and having children. And I think one of the concerns, Bobby, that would be in the community is, are disabled people in a position to be able to bring up, rear and look after children?
Yes and no.
Okay. So who makes the decision?
It's up to the person that's going to have the baby.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. Because one of my episodes is the abortion. I've got an episode that abortion covers a scenario. If you're pregnant and you've got a 3-month ultrasound and the ultrasound deems your baby to be disabled, what do you do?
Well, same thing. In a few years' time, they'll be able to tell by the contents of the amniotic fluid, so we're told.
Yeah.
That at about 3 months, you'll be able to tell if there is a high propensity that your child's going to be homosexual.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you do?
Well, I mean, the thing is, do you abort the baby or do you keep the baby? And that is, and for me, that is not for me to say. It's an individual decision.
Can I tell you a personal story about that then?
Yeah.
Okay, so here, I had some friends and they, in exactly that situation, and when at the ultrasound, they said, look, the baby's bowel is developing outside the body. Several of the vertebrae are fused together. The bone in the jaw is fused. The one of the bones in the leg fused together without a joint. Said the baby may survive. There's a small chance the baby will survive, but if the baby does survive, it's going to have lots of operations, and it'll spend years in quite a deal of agony trying to make it so that this baby will be able to lead a semi-normal life. It'll never lead a normal life. It'll only lead a semi-normal life, and it's going to be severely disabled. Okay, so they had the baby. They were born again Christians. Mm-hmm. Thou shalt not kill. They had the baby. Okay. The baby is the sweetest, loveliest kid. He's about 9 years old now. Bobby, this kid lives in absolute agony. He has these operations where they have to stretch the bones and stretch the joints, and they have this contraption on his leg where they have to turn the screw half a turn every day, and you can hear him screaming down the street. And he's had that many operations now and so much general anesthetic, he's starting to lose his mind. He can't concentrate. If he passes out, he blanks out, he's losing it. What was the right... Now, I agreed with them, what you were saying. Is yes, it's up to them to choose to have that baby. But now looking at how that kid is a beautiful kid, but the amount of suffering he is in, how can they justify letting that child go through that amount of suffering?
Well, maybe they made the wrong decision.
Is there any times when you think it's the right decision to say, yes, we should abort this fetus?
I think there can be.
Okay.
Absolutely. Like if your baby is going to, and you don't, this is the problem, you don't know till the baby's born how much suffering the baby's going to have. So you've got to have a preconceived idea or make that judgment to abort or not to abort. So in your case, with this baby being in pain, this baby would have maybe been okay to be aborted because he's just, you said he screams in pain and suffers.
Yes, well, absolutely.
That's hard on the parents too and hard on the baby.
And it's quite ironic because of this, they've given up their religion.
Really?
Yes, they have. They believed that God would save the baby and all of this, and now the baby's just living in chronic pain and they're really, really suffering.
Do they regret not aborting the baby?
I don't know. I haven't gone into
that
conversation.
I guess part of them does. There must be a part that loves the baby. And
Yes.
But there would be a part that would...
It's just, look, the thing is, I'm a little bit thick-skinned from my MS and I'm very straight down the line with things. So in a scenario, when you have a huge problem with the baby and the baby's so severely disabled, then it wouldn't be it'd be good to have a think about seriously aborting a baby and then maybe say, well, if you've got to just understand that when your baby's born and your baby's disabled, that you've got a disabled child.
Yes.
And it is more difficult. So that's why it's an individual decision on the parents at that time to say, do I want to go through that? Do I want to have my baby who's a male or female? If it's a female, the you know, they can't play sport and go shopping and all that sort of stuff. So these are the topics. Now, I'm not being political here. You know, I'm a very straight-laced sort of bloke.
It's a very mature attitude that you've got, though, that if the baby is going to be severely, and we mean severely disabled, and looks as though it's going to have a life of pain and suffering, it would be okay to abort. Sometimes it might be difficult to be able to tell. Perhaps it's right to err on the side of caution and abort anyway. Sometimes maybe you might take the chance, but if you take that chance, there's a severe consequence. Bobby Badrum, it's been great to have you on the show.
Thanks, mate.
you've done a really interesting series of documentaries. We hope that it goes well. We'd like to hear from you again in a year or so to see what outcome there has been from these documentaries, especially after it's been on the BBC. Yeah. One of the things I'd like you to do is a person who has been regarded as disabled, but have made a life for yourself, and you've had a lot to do with other disabled people. Could you give a message to the community?
Yeah, that's not a problem at all. What I want to say to people with disabilities in general is my thing is, and Dr. John has told me to always given me a lot of feedback. I've got good people around me. It takes 47 muscles to frown and 13 to smile. So if you're frowning, you're using more energy. So to approach a smiling person, that's great. Now when you're disabled, just get out there and have a go. All you can get is a yes and a no. I've got 10,000 no's, believe me. I'm in television. You get used to it. But for every no you get, you're one step closer to your yes. Yes, you can be angry and things can happen. You can have flat tires and this and that. But you know what? Just stay positive.
And a message, please, for the able people. How should we treat disabled people?
Okay, that's a good one. Able-bodied people should approach and preach deal with a disabled person normally. Don't change your outlook. Go up, say good day, smile, no problem at all. There shouldn't be any difference. So able-bodied people and disabled people should be getting together on very well.
Bobby Badgerum, thank you for being on Allegro Non Troppo. Peter and I will be back next week, everyone. Bye.
Indeed. Bye.